Why are we here? Why are we gathered on this day? It's always amazing that Good Friday is the day when the churches are almost the most full. But why this day when it's all about death? Particularly for us in a culture which avoids death so much, we avoid suffering at all cost. Why are you here? We need to really look seriously at this question. What is it that draws us? What is it that causes us to come here to try and commemorate the death of a man from 2,000 years ago? It really all depends on who that man is. If Jesus is just a good man, if Jesus is just a good moral teacher, an inspiring life, then this is not much of a celebration. You know, many countries celebrate good people. In the US, they have a special day celebrating the death of Martin Luther King. Is today something like that? Simply a day to be inspired by a good person? The reading we just heard, the gospel, tries to clear this question up very straight away at the beginning. Tries to establish who is this man and why are we here? Now, you probably didn't pick up the significance of what was said. The opening where Jesus is in the Garden of Gethsemane and the soldiers come to arrest him. Jesus stands up and says, "Who are you looking for?" Jesus of Nazareth. And it says, Jesus replied and said, "I am he," at which point the soldiers stepped back and fell to the ground. Now that has to sound odd. What would cause a band of battle-hardened, heavily armed soldiers to fall to the ground? Fortunately, the problem is that we don't quite get the fullness of the translation here. What Jesus actually says is not, "I am he," but "I am." Many thousand years earlier, Moses had encountered God in the burning bush and said, "Tell me your name. I must tell people who I have spoken to." And God revealed his name, "I am who am." I am existence itself. And so when Jesus says, "Who are you looking for?" he wants to make sure that they know exactly who they are arresting. I am. This is God. And he speaks it with such power and authority that they fall to the ground. And yet now knowing who it is that they are arresting, they come back again. And he once again says, "I am." And they bind him, they arrest him. So we need to be really clear. This is not just a good man. This is not just a good moral teacher. This is God. That humanity has now bound in chains to take, to be killed. We can look at that and immediately think they didn't understand what they were doing. If they really understood, they wouldn't have done this. And Jesus himself says, "Forgive them, Father, for they don't know what they're doing." But the one thing that is clear is that God knows what he's doing. He knows exactly what is happening here. And particularly here in John's Gospel, we find that Jesus is completely in control the whole way through this story. What you find here is very interesting, that the story here begins and ends in a garden. The Gospel we just heard starts in the Garden of Gethsemane, leads to the Passion where Jesus is then crucified and his body is taken down and placed in a brand new tomb in a garden. God knows exactly what he's doing here. The because the events that led us to this point started in a garden. In the Garden of Eden was where the rebellion of the human heart began. So if we want to understand what is this day about, we need to go back and look briefly what happened in the garden. We know the story of creation. God loved the world into existence, and he creates. Adam and Eve stand there to receive this amazing gift of relationship with God. A relationship so great that he would later on say through the prophets, he desires this relationship to be like a marriage. I will be your God and you will be my people, to live in intimacy. And as a way of almost signing the covenant of this relationship, he gives them the whole world as a symbol of his love. And the greatest tragedy ever, that we took the world and pushed God away. To put this in perspective, this would be like a young man kneeling before his beloved to propose to her in marriage, professing his love for her and handing out this engagement ring, and for her to take the ring in her hands and then push his face into the mud. The whole point of that gift was to express a greater gift. A wedding ring means nothing without the relationship behind it. In the same way, the whole of our world is meaningless unless we understand that the giver of that gift wants to be in this intimate union with us. We walked out of the Garden of Eden having pushed God's face into the dirt, saying that we did not want him. We did not want relationship with him. We would take the gift and leave him behind. Here, in this new garden, God comes to give us a second chance. He comes once again to profess his love in such a powerful way that it cannot be denied, and to once again give humanity the chance of responding. He also comes to take away everything that blocks us from that relationship. As a result of the fall, humanity spiraled into this spiral of violence, and particularly of blame. Once again, you know the story where after Adam and Eve sinned, God comes back into the picture and shines the light of truth upon them. And he says, Adam, where are you? Now, God knows everything. He knows where Adam is. The whole point is that Adam doesn't know where Adam is. Adam is living in denial. He's living in this place where he's justifying his actions, rationalizing and saying, this was the best thing we could have ever done. And God challenges him and says, look at the truth of where you are. And he blames. Rather than looking at his own heart, he blames the woman. And the woman blames the serpent. And forevermore, we've been blaming. Our whole world today is built upon blame. Someone has to be at fault, and it's not me. The whole of the world's violence and pain and hatred has come out of this. So Jesus doesn't just come to profess his love to us, but he comes to take away every blockage that is in the way. And you'll notice he doesn't do it by blaming. He doesn't do it by condemning us. He doesn't stand there and say, actually, you're the ones at fault. We've been doing that well enough ourselves. He does it by taking the blame upon himself, by willingly taking it all upon his own shoulders. In the Jewish tradition, there is this very holy feast day, the Day of Atonement. If you read in Leviticus, it speaks about the ritual of this day where it was a day of cleansing of all sins, where the high priest would take a goat and he would lay his hands upon the head of the goat and he would speak out all the sins of the people of Israel, transferring it from themselves onto this animal. And then the animal would be killed. The idea that if the animal now bears our sin, once it dies, our sin dies. This is where we get the idea of the scapegoat. Jesus now stands in that position. He willingly takes upon himself the sin of the whole of humanity. Every bit of rebellion, every bit of violence, every bit of anger and hatred, this is what he carries upon his shoulders as he walks up the mountain of Calvary. And he dies, and so our sin dies. It no longer exists. We are now set free completely. We are now completely released from everything that was upon us. This is why we are here. This is why we celebrate today. Not because it's inspiring, but because it's liberating. The world is full of inspiring stories and inspiring lives that don't have the power to bring about any change in our lives at all. They might encourage us. They might even make us feel guilty that we're not up to that standard. But of themselves, they have no power. But this one does. This story transforms us because it has taken away all sin. And in place of all that blame, everything that we have placed upon God, he gives us back love. In the face of the cross, the very simple question we need to look at is this real? Is it simply a fairy tale? Is it a nice story the church tells to try and keep everyone in line and behaving themselves? Or did this really happen? Were you loved so much that God himself would become human, take this burden upon his own shoulders and die to set you free? That is really the one question you have to answer in your life. Did this happen? It's an answer which transforms everything. If it didn't happen, if it's simply just a nice moral tale, there is no hope for any of us. We are stuck in our sin. We are stuck in this spiral of blame and anger and hatred. And no matter how many self-help manuals you read, you will never get out of it. But if this is real, if God has set us free, then we are free. We are liberated. We are now set free from everything that holds us down. This is our reason for rejoicing. This is where our hope comes from. This is where our joy comes from. Because we who are dead have now experienced the most beautiful exchange. God has taken our death upon himself and given us his life. This is freedom. But we need to claim it. And sadly, this is the point where so many Catholics fall short. We know the story, but we never take hold of it. We've been told this at school, we've experienced this every year at Easter, but we never get to the place where we realize, I need this. To get to that place of humility where I realize, I cannot do this without him. I need a savior. Until you can reach that point, you have not encountered Jesus. Until you reach that point, you have not known freedom. So many Catholics live under this burden of trying and trying to meet some mark, trying to be accepted by God, and don't realize that God has already done it for you. If only we would have the humility to say, God, I need a Savior. If we acknowledge that this is real, if we really acknowledge the power of God in the cross, what He has done for us, we are also faced with a very uncomfortable question of what is our response? How do I respond to this? If I'm loved this much, if what we gaze upon on the cross actually happened, how am I meant to respond to that? Go back to our scenario of the young man proposing to his girlfriend. She's just taken the ring, pushed his face into the mud, and gone off. Imagine for a moment that she suddenly has this pang of conscience and realizes what she's done. She comes back to him, still firmly gripping this ring, and says, look, I'm sorry for what I did. I'll hold on to this forevermore. And in gratitude, I'll send you a nice card on your birthday every year. How's that? Or maybe she wants to go even more and says, look, in gratitude for this gift, how about I come and have a cup of tea with you every week? We'll sit down for an hour and have a talk. Now, the guy's probably going to be grateful. It's better than having his face in the dirt. But compared to what his intention was, it'll never match. His intention all along was that he wanted to give his life to her. In giving that ring, he was saying, I will not be content until my whole life is spent pouring out my love for you. All I want is for you to make a decision to receive that love and to be with me forevermore. Anything short of that will not match his intention. As Jesus gives himself upon the cross, we need to realize that this is his intention. God didn't die on the cross because he was bored one day and had nothing better to do. He was driven by love. His heart was aflame with love, burning madly with love, because his only desire ever since the dawn of time is that he wanted to be intimately in relationship with you. How do you respond? If you acknowledge the truth of this, what response do we make? There is no simple answer to that. There is no law, there is no rules in the church that can tell you how to respond. This is why, as it says in the Gospel of John, at the point where Jesus' side is pierced, it quotes from the prophet Zechariah, they will look upon the one whom they have pierced, and they will mourn as for an only son. The only response we can make to this is to gaze upon the cross, to look deeply at the wounds of Jesus and let our hearts be broken. As we see his heart being torn apart by the spear, let my heart, let your heart be broken open by the truth of this love. Have the courage to receive the love, to let the truth of this sink in. Have the courage to cry out saying, God, I need you. I need a Savior. So as we continue into this commemoration, let the mystery of what we celebrate really pierce your heart. Let yourselves be moved by what we celebrate here as we hold aloft the cross of Jesus. Look upon the one who has been pierced in love for you, and let your heart be broken in love for him.